Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
A lot of movement in the Pac-12 with coaching. We'll keep an eye on that. Nick Daschle of the Oregonian covers Oregon State. Big win on Saturday by the Beavers in men's college basketball. It was like 10 days ago. I was kind of wondering about Wayne Tinkle's future at Oregon State. All he's done is win three straight games, beat a couple of few good teams in this conference, beats Oregon, I believe for the fifth time in seven tries. Dana Altman, for whatever reason, struggles with Wayne Tinkle. Wayne Tinkle's a burr in Dana Altman's saddle. Dana Altman's got kryptonite, and Wayne Tinkle is that kryptonite. Have I made myself clear? Nick Daschle of the Oregonian here to talk about it. How you doing, man? What do you say to the Oregon fans? Because I heard Oregon's fans squawking, hey, we didn't have four players. We didn't have five players. We had to walk to the game uphill. I hear a lot of excuses. Is it valid for Oregon fans to make excuses in the wake of a defeat to Oregon State?
Oh, I suppose a little bit. But, I mean, it's not like every team is going through these things this year. I mean, it was just 2 weeks. Oregon State was shut down for over a week, and you know, missing coaches and missing players. You know, they were coming up in the Arizona game. I mean, back with the whole team, and it wasn't even they weren't even really full practices. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I get it, but.
I think that if I'm a Oregon fan, I look at the game and I go, look, we didn't have our guys, whatever. But I believe, and I think there's some support for this out there, that part of managing your program is managing COVID. And if you have bad results with contact tracing, and again, I'm talking to Washington here in football, and maybe Oregon in men's basketball this week, and maybe some others nationally, If you don't have players available because of COVID, that is on your program.
Yeah, at this stage, I mean, you kind of got to start. What happens if we're being, you know, dismayed players? We got to have some walk-ons, you know, ready. If this player can't play, how do we adjust? I mean, by this point in the season, I mean, they've known about this since July. So, you know, a lot of this isn't a surprise. I mean, still, I mean, I don't know what Oregon could have done the other night, really, other than not get clobbered on the boards. I mean, that was really their undoing. But still, I mean, you know, you got to have a plan B and a plan C in this thing. And, you know, it's not like Oregon State's coming to the party with, you know, a bunch of NBA players. I mean, they're making do with some okay college inside guys, and they're making it work. And they've managed to work their way out of this hole that they were in about 10 days ago, and this week is pretty enormous for Oregon State, I think.
How so?
Well, this is, I mean, you get to take a three-game winning streak on a real test drive. You've taken it down to LA where you're playing, you know, the Pac-12 leader UCLA and USC, which might be the most talented team in the league. You go down there and, you know, you see what you got. You know, let's say you get a split down there. Maybe you can get a sweep. If you do one of those two things, I mean, you're still not talking NCAAs because I think that Portland and Wyoming loss, it's bad. But still, I mean, it's, you know, if they can come out of L.A. with some success, I mean, this season's going places.
Nick Daschle is with us from the Oregonian. Daschle, how much trouble was Tinkle in? Just, You know, because in the last 10 days, he's won three games. He's now 3-0. Everything has gone quiet. I think the questions have stopped. But had it continued, was he in jeopardy of losing his job? Or was Oregon State, amid COVID, amid financial crisis, probably not going to make a change because of that?
I don't think he was in serious trouble. I think this season you've got to analyze it a little differently. Now, if the Arizona game comes up again and again, then yes, he's in trouble. But I don't think the one game and then some pretty bad results early in the year by themselves would have done that. He's got some decent players coming in, and I think for sure now he's okay. But I think 10 days ago, I think it was more fans talking than Oregon State talking. But plus the money aspect was, the buyout would have been over $4 million. That's definitely a factor. But I don't think the Arizona game in itself was getting him fired. But I think if they'd had, if they had a, two, three, four more of those, then it might have got to be serious.
Nick Daschle with us. Basketball-wise this season, how do you expect conference tournament to unfold? They're still planning to do it in Vegas. Will you go? Will you watch it on TV? The tournament, do you expect that the NCAA tournament's going to be messy? What do you see happening?
I don't know what to do. If you decide what you might do with Vegas, usually go. I don't know. Are you planning on going or?
I don't know. There's part of me that wants to go because I could, if nothing else, write about the contrast like it would be the year coming full circle, because that's when everything got shut down. Oregon State hit a buzzer beater. The Beavers were going on to the second round. I went back to my hotel room and started writing, and all of a sudden my phone's blowing up and college sports is being shut down. So I think the full circle of Vegas, that would be an opportunity to kind of write about it and cover it. I also just think it's incredibly difficult to sit on press row, removed from the teams, and do a Zoom call with people and to justify being there in person. Like, why am I there? I can't really interact with people.
I mean, so far I've covered more of the basketball and football games from home than at the arena and the stadium, because we just don't have any access to anybody. And, if all you're doing is sitting in a press box or you're sitting, up on top of the arena, there's just not a lot you can get. But I think in Vegas, there might be a little bit more color you can add to it. The Pac-12 people will be there. And I think you'll have a chance to, if for no other reason, just bump into some people that, you might want to talk to from 6 feet apart or whatever. So there might be that, but I haven't decided yet. But I think they're going to try to play it there. I don't know. I mean, there's no reason right now for me to think that they're not going to try it. I'm with you. I don't know at this point, but I'm kind of leaning toward going, but I don't know. And I think they will play down there.
Nick Daschle with us of the Oregonian. I want to pivot to football here for a moment. A lot of change in the conferences. Tim DeRuyter's leaving Cal for Oregon. Certainly Washington hiring a new coordinator. That kind of stuff happens every year, and everybody sort of celebrates it, myself included, as, hey, Oregon got better here, or Washington's trying to move in this direction or that direction. Keith Hayward leaving Oregon as a safeties coach, seemingly heading to Cal, it looks like. Oregon State's staff has been very quiet. Is there some area of improvement that Jonathan Smith could make with his staff that you see?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say just because, you're not in the room every day knowing what they go through. But I mean, surely there's some minds there that you might want to at least kick the tires on the defensive side. And also somebody that can bring, some real, pizzazz on the recruiting trail. I mean, their guys have proven to be, good, but they certainly don't bring the recruiting resumes of, say, like some of the Oregon coaches or whatnot on the recruiting trail. And, I have no knowledge of this. I just, I would be a little disappointed if I was an Oregon State fan and I found out that they didn't even kick the tires on Keith Hayward. I mean, I don't know that, you know, that he was even a player at Oregon State, but I think he's somebody, you know, at least got to, you know, give some thought to, and how could we work him in somehow. But I, you know, we talked last year about how, you know, Oregon State and their, you know, the continuity of their coaching staff, they've been together for 2 years and it appears they're going to be together for a third year. Now that's a good thing, but at some point that starts not to be a good thing. Cause I mean, you kind of want other teams to want your coaches and, you know, you kind of want to shake up your coaching staff or now that if they go another year where nobody's leaving, I mean, at some point then you start wondering, oh, has Jonathan, you know, is he too loyal to his coaches, you know, whatnot, or, you know, are these coaches not good enough to where anybody else wants them? And so that might be something to keep an eye out, you know, a year from now. But, yeah, anyway.
Where's the strength of Oregon State's future as a football program? Are they enough? Like, everybody has an identity. What is Oregon State's identity?
Oh, I think as long as Jonathan's there, it's going to be on the offensive side. I mean, I'm not saying he ignores defense, but I mean, he's clearly, his background is in offense, and you know, they need to be, you know, on the border, at least borderline exciting, on that side of the ball to give their fans some hope. And I think they have a better chance of getting an elite player on that side of the ball than maybe they do on the defensive side. It's not saying that they won't get elite guys on the defensive side, but I think with Jonathan and whoever he ever has as his offensive coordinator in years to come, I just think that's going to be their strength. You know, is not just throwing the ball either. I think, you know, I think they've kind of proven that as long as they hold on to Jim Halchak, I mean, he's really good at developing offensive linemen, and you know, they can sell that to running backs and receivers that, you know, we can get you the ball and get you to the next level, because they are getting guys to the next level on that side of the ball.
We talk a lot about continuity of staff being a good thing. Is it possible that continuity can also be a negative? Do you need some turnover in your staff? Mario Cristobal comes to mind. He says, you know, I asked him about losing the coordinator, and he said, you know, that he lost the offensive coordinator last year. He's replacing the defensive coordinator this year. He sort of liked the staggering of that, you know, that, you know, there's some fresh ideas in the room. Does Oregon State need some fresh ideas?
I think they do within a year. You know, like I said, I said, the players hearing the same message is good to a point, but at some point, you know, particularly if the defense doesn't make a big step this year. If the defense doesn't take a big stride this year, I think then you got to start looking at doing a little bit of shakeup on that side of the ball, whether it's the coordinator or one of the position, you know, group guys. Because the defense got quite a bit better last year. I don't know if this year is fair to say whether they got better or worse just because of, you know, the weirdness that we were in. But I think in 21, with guys they got coming back, they've got to make a stride to at least get to, you know, maybe middle of the conference, maybe even, you know, getting up to fourth or fifth, you know, best defense in the conference.
Yeah, I think from Oregon's standpoint, you view it as, you know, Oregon's bringing in a great teacher who's going to coach the talent there. I think that's a luxury you have when you've got a great recruiting staff. Nick Daschle with us. Daschle, I appreciate you, man, and appreciate you bringing your expertise. You working on anything in the short term that Oregon State fans can tune into?
Oh, yeah, I'm working on something on Lori Alatish, the forward that had 16 rebounds against Oregon State, or against Oregon on Saturday, and looking into a few things with Oregon State, just financially and, you know, the stadium. Some of the renderings have come out of the new stadium, and or the stadium remodel, and you know, what they might be doing with, you know, with the deficit that they're going to end up having this year, where that stands. So kind of look into some of that, but we're a little bit away. Football is still a little bit off the radar right now because they're just getting into workouts. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm working on.
Nick Daschle, I appreciate you, my friend. And there he goes from the Oregonian. Leave it here. Coming up, we'll play Punch It Audio. Plus, I want to talk more about that. Are we in excuses culture? I got a friend who told me, texted me earlier today. He says, we're in an excuses culture. Everybody making excuses. How does that infect the sports world? And how do we need to take it into account when we're framing championships, especially in a COVID era? We'll talk about it next. All right, I grew up with a backyard, nice-sized backyard. My parents lived a little rural. I've talked about it before. We weren't, like, farmers, but we were, like, pretend farmers as I grew up. We had, I had pigs. I was in 4-H. My sister had a horse. We had a steer at one time. We had lambs. We had rabbits. We had chickens. We had dogs. And essentially, we lived with, you know, behind my parents' house, acres and acres and acres of wide open sort of California landscape. And there was a reservoir back there. Like, as a kid, it was a treat to walk out my back door with my dog. And I could walk a long way without running into a fence, like a long way. We eventually did put in a fence, but I could hop that fence and then walk a long way without hitting another fence. I always took pride in that, and I always looked down at my friends whose parents would, like, take out their front lawn and put in rock or put in plants. From a maintenance standpoint, I get it. You don't want to mow the lawn. It's all, you know, it can get soggy, especially in the Pacific Northwest. I get it. But I always kind of look down at that. And now I find myself, I got to be honest with you, full confession. I find myself looking, and I texted somebody over the weekend, friend of mine, Mike Barrett, who has artificial grass, artificial turf in his backyard. And I said, how do you like that? Because I went outside and I was like, man, I can't walk on my back lawn. It's all soggy. You know, the dogs, they're too much of a princess to walk on the back lawn because it's wet. So they kind of tiptoe around it. And then, of course, comes the springtime and the mowing and, you know, dealing with the lawn. And so I've been texting a few people going, you know, do you have people who have artificial turf? Like, has the advances in artificial turf reach the point where Canzano can, with a straight face, say, I'm going to put artificial turf in and not feel like I have become Mr. Suburban Nightmare Guy who doesn't have a lawn? Because I love having a lawn. As a kid, we had a nice-sized lawn. And I mowed it. And that was part of my job. And it wasn't perfect. It had low points. It had high points. There was rocks here and there. But we played tackle football on that lawn with my friends. Every year we'd have tackle football, we'd put the cones out, we'd play, you know, we had full games going on. I just look at my lawn in my backyard, and I'm now going, should I get artificial turf? Like, would you guys have a viewpoint on this? As I said it, Zach, did you, artificial turf in my backyard, you come over, I got some artificial turf out there instead of lawn. Are you making judgments about me?
No, I'm not making any judgments because I think a lot of people go that route nowadays. I have a good friend of mine who just put in a little artificial turf in his side yard area, and it does look nice. It looks sleek, but I agree. I think there is something to that natural grass, and there's something to someone's character about, you know, maintaining that natural grass too.
I like having a lawnmower.
Am I the only one that thinks it's weird that the Portland Diamond Project guy has artificial turf in his lawn?
But look around. I think part, like, I grew up in the Bay Area thinking Pacific Northwest people. Like, I was born in Oregon. But I looked at, like, when I was in college, we used to play baseball games against the Northwest colleges. Washington State came down and played us in a 2 or 3 game series. George Fox came down and played us in a series because the weather in the early part of the college baseball season in the Pacific Northwest is crappy. So all those Northwest teams would play road trips in California and in Arizona. They'd get out, they're getting out of town. But all of a sudden it stopped like 10 or 12 years ago. They stopped doing that as much, and I realized why. And you could drive by any high school or middle school in the Pacific Northwest now, and you're going to see field turf, and you're going to see a variety of turf projects. They're in parks that have turf, and they put in a little play structure down the street from our house. They put in artificial turf, and I was like, what kind of play structure is this? And now I find myself looking at it going, I wonder what that costs to put that in. I don't know. I don't have any sense of what it costs. But I'm looking at it going, gosh, it was good for the softball teams. It was good for the baseball teams. And I don't think Oregon State baseball, by the way, Oregon State baseball become a powerhouse program. Perennial winner under Pat Casey. But I think an assist has to go to the field turf people. Because I think what coincided with Pat Casey's rise as a coach in college baseball and Oregon State becoming really good and Oregon becoming really good in softball for a stretch under Mike White, I think what coincided with that was an improvement in facilities relating to the field turf. Suddenly baseball teams that, you know, in the Northwest could do nothing more than hit in the cages for years in the early part of the season could get outdoors. And they could take batting practice outside, or they could take infield for a while outside or a stretch, because the field wasn't a bunch of puddles and muddy grass. I think there's something to that. I always remember thinking that as Pat Casey's teams moved on. Peter Sampson, are you drawing a judgment about me if you see turf in my yard?
You know, I'll be real. I would, but I think that's a me thing. You got to ask yourself, John, like what is the goal of the backyard? Is it for the kids to have a good time, the dogs to run around to host a barbecue? Are you lawnmower guy? Do you like to get out there, get dirty and take care of it?
I do, but it's not for the love of the grass. Like got I could you. Find, I could yeah. prune trees and have that same love. And okay. I could, and the thing that I have is, we don't have a driveway, like a traditional driveway in front of our house. We kind of have this strange driveway that is in the back of our house. We live kind of on a corner piece where I don't really pull into the front of the house, which I like. I like the privacy of that. It's kind of like the Batcave, whatever. Nobody knows where I am. I just disappear around the block and suddenly I'm in my house. I'm not talking to anybody. That's awesome. But when, you know, that strip you have in front of your house, that's grass, mm-hmm. in order to mow that, at my house, I have to take my lawnmower on a walk that is like a 5-minute walk around the block. I have to go all the way around the block with the lawnmower and emerge in front of the house. So I literally have to go half a city block pushing the lawnmower. I'll pass by people who are walking their dogs. I'll pass by kids riding their bikes on a skateboard, lady going for a run, neighbors driving by. And they go, there he is. He's walking his lawnmower. But I take it out and it takes me 30 seconds to mow that front strip. Vroom, vroom, I'm done. See, and then I've had people say to me, you need to put in turf there. You need to put it. And I'm like, no, I'm a grass guy. But all of a sudden, I got to be honest, I find myself thinking about turf. I think I'm answering this question myself. I'm going to judge myself if I do this. I'm going to judge myself if I go maintenance free on the grass. But you know what? I don't care. I think I'm ready to explore it. So I told Anna, I said, we'll start looking at like what it would be. Let's just look. That's where we start all things that end up with us doing something.
make sure to share a picture of that on Twitter if you do it, man. I'm really curious to see what that looks like.
Yeah, I'm not talking about putting like a full putting green in, because yeah. I know you can do that. Yeah. I mean, as much as I'd like to put in like a baseball diamond in my backyard, like a wiffle ball stadium, you know, that would be awesome. I think I'm more just looking at, like, you know, we just have a small lawn. Just want to replace it with some turf and like a good company. I want a good company that does a good job, because I don't want to be.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.